Hello, and welcome to our series of podcasts for Equine Health Week 2024, all of which have been themed around the topic of equine well-being. Today, we're focusing on soundness, which is something that most horse owners have experienced at some point, whether that's a short-term niggle all the way through to long-lasting and more complicated problems. While it's impossible to completely rule out accident or injury, the ways in which we manage and train our horses can have an impact on their ability to remain sound and comfortable in whichever job we ask of them. To get a better understanding of this, I'm joined by two highly experienced vets from our National Lottery funded World Class programme. First up, we've got Liz Brown, who is the eventing team vet, and she's supported champion squads to numerous podium places during her time with the programme. Away from the teams, she runs a specialist equine practice that focuses on performance horses in eventing, racing and dressage. Welcome, Liz.
Hello. Hi.
And joining Liz is Rob Alton, who is the para dressage team vet, and he also looks after the British dressage under 21 teams. He has a keen interest in the management of competition horses and works in daily practice at Scott Dunn's equine clinic while not on team duties. Welcome, Rob.
Hello, thank you.
So first of all, I think before we get too deep into the soundness, I want to ask you something that I've been asking most of our contributors this week. What does equine well-being actually mean to you?
Is managing a horse in a way to promote its health, really. That's both the physical health and the mental health of the horse. And I know it's quite interesting now that people are more aware of animal welfare, and that even in the Pony Club, people have talked about the five freedoms of animal welfare that ensure the animal's physical and mental health needs are met. So those are ones that I expect people have may or may not be able to look up, but freedom from hunger and thirst, freedom from pain, injury and disease, freedom to show natural behaviours, freedom from discomfort and freedom from fear and distress. So I just think that's probably what, as vets, we try and look at when we're dealing with any horse for most of our day-to-day work.
Would you agree with that, Rob?
Yeah, that's very well put. I think I just add that horse that's happy and willing to do the job it's intended or asked of it.
Right. Well, that leads us very nicely then into soundness. It's one of those words that gets kind of thrown around a lot with horse owners, but what does soundness or unsoundness actually mean?
Well, when we sort of talk about unsoundness, we're really normally referring to an asymmetry of gait or a lameness, so that might be subtle or it might be more of an obvious lameness. And it also depends on the job the horse is expected to do. So really something that might be unsound, you know, at one level of work might be perfectly sound if you're the level of work's less. So I think unsoundness, and it sort of depends on what people are expecting of the horse.
Yeah, exactly. I think often for horses competing, I try to avoid the word unsound as it comes across as very negative, but unlevel or loss of rhythm. Because you can have a lot of horses that have little niggles or things that are still capable of doing their job, as Liz said. I think I would say unsound, generally reserved for when the horse is to the point where it cannot perform the job or task it's asked of it.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point that there is various degrees to this that we're talking about. As I said in the intro, yeah, you've got your little niggles and things all the way through to something that's far more career ending in some cases.
Yeah, definitely.
And some soundness, as Rob said, might be sort of temporary issues that can be easily reversed. The horse might get over them or itself, or they might require some treatment. And there are other injuries that might be related to more long-term unsoundness. And obviously the main thing is to understand why the horse is unsound and then put the appropriate measures in place to help to improve the situation or help it to recover.
So what then are some of the common causes that might result in a horse presenting, say, unlevel, asymmetry, or that kind of thing?
I think certainly wear and tear with age and use is probably very high on our list of issues that can cause some unsoundnesses or little niggles and problems as we see coming in, with the accidental injury. And some of the young horses coming into training may have developmental issues that need addressing that could create unsoundnesses.
Yeah, as Rob said, there's joint issues, soft tissue injuries. Some of these things may be pre-existing, so their horse may have developed as even in young horses, like OCD and joints, and sometimes they may be sort of as a result of wear and tear and injury to structures, either accidental injury or injury caused by just general workload.
And as vets then, what sort of signs and symptoms are you looking for in a horse that might indicate there's an issue there? I imagine it must be quite a scale from the sort of the fairly obvious to some far more subtle signs.
Okay, yeah, well. Definitely. The symptoms can be varying, you know, tremendously. I think sometimes she just doesn't kind of said in the beginning, horses that are just unhappy or unwilling to do the job that they're asked of it. And that may not be any overt lameness issues there, but there could be an underlying problem that I think also some of those that we see, because a lot of lamenesses are bilateral, so they don't show as a nodding head or a dropping hip as we might see with a lot of horses, but it's affecting both legs together. So just because they're moving level doesn't mean there isn't an unsoundness there. And, you know, sometimes you see more behavioral things or different things creeping in as your first telltale sign.
And also it's quite useful with all your, when you have a horse or you're looking after horses, to have a really baseline of what that horse looks like day to day. So when you go into the stable in the morning and feel its legs, if you might notice maybe it's got a pulse to its foot, which might indicate if it's unsound, it might be to do with a foot, or if it's got one foot warmer than the other, or if there's some swelling on a leg, or something like, or if it's been kicked. There's lots of things that we can notice about the horses if we just take a few minutes to check them, look at their, say, their demeanour when you're approaching them. Often you might go and catch your pony from the field and realise there might be something not quite right about it. So there's quite a few subtle things. And there's also a question of feeling their legs, feeling over them with your hands, and just general observation to make sure that from day to day, because some things will just creep up on you gradually, and some things will be an obvious kind of new issue that you might notice if you just take the time to have a proper look at your horse or pony.
I think you said a really good point there about how things creep in gradually, and I do find as a vet it's nice to see horses when they're normal or so-called normal as well, so you get to know that horse and what's normal for it. So when you're at a yard or people you go to regularly, you just trot the horse up or sit on lunge or see it ridden or anything, and you know this is how it is on its normal, on its average day. And then you see those little things changing when you review or reassess at times down the line or through the competition season. And particularly as when you're the person riding and doing it every day, you may not necessarily appreciate those little small things creeping in. I think as much as, you know, Mirlis might say when we see them less frequently and periodically and think, oh, that wasn't like it was, you know, a couple months ago when I was here, don't you think?
Yes, I do agree. And also I think we, in our own minds, we retain a certain amount of that knowledge as to what the horse's legs feel like or other things. So if we're palpating their legs thoroughly and feeling all the tendons and ligaments, I might notice if they've got like a slightly thicker suspensory branch than they normally have, and those sort of things. I think we kind of get to know the horses we deal with regularly, and we get to notice any little tiny changes that happen when we re-inspect them. So a lot of that's just some. And also I find with the grooms and people we work with with the top level horses, they're often very thorough about what they can feel. So they might well easily say to you, this is very slightly more swollen, this leg, or I've noticed a little lump here or something like that. And I think anyone with who has a horse, as well as those who are dealing with top level horses, can sort of make it their business to be kind of thorough in looking at the horses and having a really good assessment of horses day to day. Because I think with horses, we all learn a lot from looking at horses. And I think for us as vets, we're very used to palpating in detail structures because we understand the anatomy of what's there. But people can get used to doing that, and then obviously they can build up their experience and knowledge of the horses they're looking after.
Yeah, and I suppose as well, it's worth, as an owner, having that open dialogue with your physio, your farrier, people like that as well, who, you know, will see your horse again trot up. It's that fresh eyes again. We're going to talk a little bit more in a bit about kind of maybe the holistic side of this and bringing in all those practitioners, but certainly from a diagnostic, looking for those early signs of a problem, those people are also incredibly valuable.
Oh, definitely. And I think, like I said, it's good to, you know, when you get to know the normal for that horse, then, and also when any little changes come in, that we're alerted to it, because obviously catching things while they're little problems or potential problems, or even just sometimes it's a reassurance saying, oh no, that was like that last time I saw it too, or maybe, or no, that's a normal feature, but it's better to have it checked and catch it before it becomes a big problem, definitely.
And I guess as well, you know, as we sort of said, that these people and having this sort of wider team approach is really helpful at sort of the start as well, but I guess also is very helpful in if you find a horse, a problem with the horse, is then having a holistic whole team approach to trying to get that horse back to where it should be.
Yeah, and I think when we think about the people who are involved with the horses day to day, obviously the farriers are vitally important because they are regularly seeing the horses. They're able to, you know, obviously keep primary job, keeping their feet in check, but they obviously will notice things about the horses, and they may say, you know, this horse is suddenly got a bit stiffer to pick up a hind leg, or it's being awkward to shoe or something, and they might notice some differences because they're going in regularly, and they may be the people that start to flag issues about soundness. And obviously some people have regular visits from physio for the horses, and then the physios will have a real baseline of what the horse normally is like, and if they're noticing issues that might need to be involved a vet, or if they might notice issues that might need to involve saddle fitting or other areas that might you might want someone to come in. And then obviously nutrition is an important part of keeping horse healthy and does have an effect on keeping them well and sound. So all of these things. And also sometimes people have maybe a lesson with an instructor and or a coach, and that person might be the person that then starts to go, actually your horse is looking a little bit irregular on the left turn, you know, and that person might have seen the horse over a period of time and they may start to notice a change in it. So I think everyone who's involved, it is always a big team effort, and it's always useful for us to have input from everyone who's involved with the horse, because I think it all helps. Everyone sees slightly different things when they see the horses, and it's all builds up the pieces of the jigsaw to try and make a sort of plan to improve the situation or the management of the horse.
Yeah, I think that's it, exactly, the pieces of the jigsaw. And I agree, I really, really value a trainer or coach's input in if you're seeing a horse, because like I say, they see from the ground the horse much more often than we do, and you know, they may say the horse doesn't normally struggle with this maneuver or this movement, or doesn't normally swap it in front of a fence or whatever the issue might be, that they kind of spot and think, oh, that's not like it normally is, and can flag it. And if you dig into some of those things that, you know, at first may seem like a training issue or just a bad day, that when you dig into them, you know, you can often find that actually there's a little underlying issue there. And I find that a lot sometimes when you highlight a problem, when it finally gets to a point, maybe you say, well, has it been doing this? And then they look back and they think, oh yeah, actually for a few weeks or a few months, it's been starting to do this. And, you know, you catch in those things and involve those, all that input earlier on, have a good impact. I think also, like with you say, with the physios and stuff, I love connecting it all together. And sometimes I think that's where a lot of people just let themselves down, where they might say the physio's done this or the saddler's done this, and they don't join up the message for what's happening, and they see them as each individual component, and not that it's all connected, and that how the horse is moving is impacting what the saddle's doing, and on down that road. So I do find I've got a lot of physios I work with where if they've seen a horse, they know I've seen them, which got me a voice note or a text and say, I saw this today, just to keep you updated. And it may be all was good, thumbs up, or it might be a little more tightness there. When you're in next, you know, follow that up, and it just keeps the conversation going between everybody and keeping the message together, I think.
And it's also useful, I think one of the areas, kind of when you're lucky enough to work with sort of some of these good riders, you realise that, you know, the riding itself is such a key part of keeping horses sound. And I would have people I deal with who are very good at keeping horses sound by the way they ride and train them. And you might see other people riding who maybe are less, just, you know, like people have, maybe there are people who are doing a lot of other things with their lives, or they may have had accidents and they may not be as fit or as able or as even themselves. And sometimes the rider's asymmetries and the rider's kind of some of the limitations of the rider may have an effect which then causes the horse to develop sort of a one-sidedness, which then can result in overloading one limb and creating a sort of injury that is just an ongoing repetitive loading because of the way it's ridden or the way it's trained. And so it's important for riders to look at themselves and maybe themselves may need assessment by a physio, or they may need to do some other exercise of the horse in order to promote symmetry in their own kind of sort of body, and, you know, managing their own kind of fitness, which also can help to improve the horse's fitness.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. You very much beat me to it with a very good answer, though, to be fair, so I'll let you off. So how can we then manage and train our horses in a way that promotes soundness in them, aside from, as Liz has said, the focusing on ourselves and making sure that the riding is coming through and supporting that?
I think you've got to look at what's in front of you with the horse, because I know I see people asking sometimes, and this horse is this age, it should be doing this work, or that it can do this level of work because it's at this age. But every horse is different, I think. So I think every horse is developing at a different rate, depending on the size or, you know, breed type or whatever it might be from a youngster on. But also, 1 5-year-old that's been in a field for the last 4 years and hasn't done anything isn't going to, even if it looks mature, it's going to take a while to build in some of that strength and fitness when it comes into work, versus a 5-year-old that's done a bit as a 3-year-old, a 4-year-old. So it depends on the horse, where it is in its development, but also what it's done previously. Does that make sense? So it's always, just look at what you've got.
And I think it's Rob says that, you know, that's really important, the conformation of the horse, the way, how athletic the horse naturally is. So there's no point pushing a horse that fundamentally is a bit restricted in its own ability to do something really sort of athletic, or put, it's like if we went to the gym and did something that was really beyond our own capabilities. You've sort of got to look at the horse and think, actually, how can this horse naturally move, and what can it be trained to do, and what actually is it training beyond its own real capabilities? And I think we cause injuries in horses where we train them beyond, as you say, their state of training or their state of maturity, or sometimes they're just their fundamental ability as the type of horse they are. So you do need to be aware of your horse's sort of restrictions, and maybe making them something with which is less athletic, jump endless big fences, or doing pole work in a way that isn't ideal for that horse. You know, pole work is very good for promoting kind of core strength, but you've got to, anything you do with a horse, you need to make sure you're doing it in an appropriate way for that horse and that situation and that rider. And there's also lots of other things that come into soundness. You know, as we said, saddle fit is really important, to have your saddles correctly fitted and appropriate for the horse. And then the shoeing, and obviously, is vital. And then even things like arena surfaces that we see, and quite a lot of correlation between the surfaces horses have worked on and some wear and tear and lameness issues. And obviously, it's ideal if you've got a variety of surfaces or hacking and things you can do which help promote core strength, and just a variety of terrain for the horse to work over, rather than necessarily just working always in the same way. And some arena surfaces are probably more just better for the horses to work on than others. And also it's to do the maintenance of the arenas and the consistency or inconsistency of the surface. So there's lots of things that you can do to help sort of promote soundness or prevent injury.
Yeah, because I was going to ask, because that leads sort of quite nicely on, I guess, eventing is one side of this, because, as you say, you've got quite a lot of different terrain in eventing, because you've got you're on a surface maybe for your jumping or your dressage, and also they've got the cross country, which is testing terrain in itself, whereas the more sort of dressage, para dressage side of things, you are continuously riding on a surface. So you beat me to it, Liz. I was going to ask about this, and the fact that, you know, as I say, particularly the dressage, para dressage side of things, the fact you're on a surface all the time, is that going to make an impact into this? Or, I mean, conversely, I guess when you're doing cross country, you've got to be quite conscious of the terrain you're training your horses on for that, because you've got all sorts of camber and ground conditions and things in there.
Plus and minuses to having good surfaces. I think certainly, like you say, with your horses or a lot of the benches, Liz, that you, by nature of the sport, you're automatically training on a lot of surfaces, where perhaps some of the more dressage horses, you know, they're on the one surface, as you say, all the time. And I think luckily in the UK, I think we're quite spoiled that we generally have pretty good surfaces. But that can be a detriment a bit when we travel away to shows and things, because we don't always necessarily have as good of a surface somewhere else. And then the horses find it much harder if they're used to something all the time, and you go somewhere else and it's maybe not as good, then those horses were going to struggle a bit more at the time.
And I think as well that applies to people who are not necessarily competing at the top level, but if you are able to vary your horse's work and if you can go hacking, I mean, it's not everyone who can go has got a good access to fields and bridleways, but the more variety of work your horse can do, the better. The sort of cross-training aspect is always good for keeping sort of horses sound. And if you can go hacking and you can go up and down a bridleway with a bit of a sort of hills and different terrains, it just helps to keep the horse sort of strong and balanced in its core, as well as working in the school. But it depends on people's facilities, and obviously you need to be in safe environment if you're so that you don't run the risk of being run over by a lorry on the main road or something like that. So yeah, it does vary what people have got. But obviously if you're, and then there are now there's quite a lot of other people can do pole work and things in the school to help strengthen the horses. There are more things like water treadmills around that are good for improving strength and conditioning in horses and building muscle in different ways. So so there's a variety of things you can do to help to sort of build up the horse's core strength.
I think, like you said, with the, you know, the riders on the horse, you know, I think two things there. Like you say, a rider can make an unsound horse look really good. And I always kind of say physios are fantastic, and that's not saying anything away from physios, but I think sometimes the best physio you can give your horses ride it correctly and ride it well. Well, so that can make a big impact on your core strength, and these things being done in the correct manner helps build that strength rather than just riding them being ridden uneven or roughly, perhaps sometimes then you're working against yourself.
So I think from that point of view, it's useful to understand how the horse develops its strength. It develops its strength by being able to carry itself forward and develop that self-courage. So you see some people thinking they're putting the horse into an outline by restricting it with the rein, and then the horse shortens its frame, and then you'll see its hind leg shorten. It makes it harder for it to use its hind leg properly and its lower back, and then the horse is more likely to develop injuries in suspensory ligaments and things. Whereas if you allow the horse to build the muscle to allow it to carry itself forward, allow the head and neck freedom to come forward, so you build that strength in the neck and build the top line, then the horse, you know, will develop the strength, and that helps to prevent injuries. But there is a very, when you watch people ride and you watch what we were doing, it's quite easy for people to just feel something on the horse that's not maybe the correct way of riding, and sometimes it's useful maybe even if they have someone to video them and look at the video. I think, well, actually maybe my horse could be going a little bit more freely forward, or they may be able to understand what they're feeling on the horse isn't always necessarily what they think the horse is looking like from the ground. So I think it's pretty easy for us to video, you know, people to have videos of themselves on horses, then maybe just to have a look at those and check that how they're riding the horses the way they think they're riding the horse. Because I think looking at their hind legs going, you know, that's the horse needs to have that freedom to push itself forward with a hind leg, and you see sometimes they get quite compressed, and that's where you develop some of the injuries from the so just riding in a non-ideal way, really.
Yeah, I think tying in with that's something I try to encourage in people is your horse needs to be comfortable and moving evenly in order to accomplish all those things you said. And sometimes when they've got little niggles and people think, oh, well, I can work on this with strength, I can make them, you know, get them more supple one way, or I can, you know, get the joint more mobilized, and it'll come with time. But the caveat for me there would be that if they're moving asymmetric and you are end up overloading certain areas, then you may be slowly causing an injury somewhere you're not intending while you're strengthening the bit, rather than just get the vet involved and make sure that horse is comfortable to start with and can work properly to then build in the core and everything. Because sometimes you could inadvertently create other problems in other places if you're not careful.
And that's great. Yeah, exactly. And also it's useful sometimes to think there's some things that cause asymmetries that are not necessarily to do with the sort of skeletal system. So we know that quite a lot of horses have issues with their guts, the ulcers or hind gut issues, and that can cause the horse to be asymmetrical and to maybe not bend round one way. It may not be able to lift the ribcage one way. It may restrict its gait. And sometimes it's the recognising that there are issues which may be internal issues like that may create asymmetries, and then you just be aware that of those as well, and they may need your vet to kind of look at and advise you on those. So just some things that people always like put down to the horse being one-sided or a behavioral thing, you just need to make sure that you're not missing something that may be an orthopedic or not an orthopedic issue.
Yeah, I think if this conversation has shown anything, it's that this seemingly quite simple subject actually incredibly broad and incredibly varied in what could be going on. But I think it's really good to talk about this and kind of and get to the bottom and have a think about it, because you know, it's, as I say, it's a problem that the vast majority of horses will experience at some point, hopefully, you know, much later in life and in a very minor way. But at some point, most of us will experience it one way or another. If you had to pick one kind of take home message for people listening, what would it be?
I suppose my thing is to really make sure you're properly monitoring, assessing your horse, so you really get to know what your horse is like, you understand what its legs feel like, how the horse put together, be observant about the horse, and then notice any changes in your horse or anything you're concerned about. I think there's a great value in being observant, looking and paying attention to detail about the horse you have, and you can learn a lot from looking at a horse and monitoring it. So and then you start to notice anything that might then need you know, a vet or a physio or a farrier or someone to come in and kind of help to assess if there are issues that you are kind of concerned about.
Yeah, I agree. I think like my best, I think, would be early intervention or prevention is better than treatment if you can get there. And like you say, when your farrier or physio are coming in, you know, you can always just say, oh, whatever you found there, do you mind just ringing my vet? Or if it's something that you think barrier thing, you know, just get people in touch and communicating. And you know, you might want a little thing that somebody saw and a little thing somebody else saw together might be a bigger thing that you tie them together and go, oh, actually maybe we should look into this more. Or even just knowing what's normal and say, yeah, no, it was no problem, but that's normal, but we'll know for next time.
Yeah, no, that's really great. And I think a lot of the principles as well that we've discussed today do tie into this greater idea of equine well-being, because if you've got a fit, as we said it at the start, if you've got a comfortable horse that's able to happily do its job, it's got a, you know, the fitness to do that, the soundness, or you know, is level enough to do that, you're setting yourself up for success there. And as Liz has said, there's, you know, internal issues and nutrition and all sorts of things. Basically, I think what we're discovering this week is that everything to do with horses is interconnected in one way or another. And it's a very big, very detailed picture when you look at it all closely. But, you know, I think this has been really interesting. So thank you both for joining us. I hope you've enjoyed sharing your experience and your wisdom with us. If you have enjoyed this podcast, make sure that you've caught up on all the other ones that we've put out for Equine Health Week. You can find them where you found this one. They are also, they're on our website, they're on major podcast platforms, and we're sharing them on social media. There's also lots of other assets going out across the week to help you keep your horses as fit, healthy and comfortable and happy, of course, as possible. And all the assets are also being collated on our website with a load of other useful links to take you out to some of the resources that are being mentioned on the podcast episodes, or that just tie in very nicely with the things we've talked about. Thank you everyone for listening. I'm going to say goodbye now to Rob and to Liz.
Thank you very much.
Bye. Thank you very much.
And thank you to everyone who's listening. Goodbye.